Well, hello there. Yes, we are back from holiday. I'm back from Crete anyway. And this is the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, David Connolly. This news is brought in partnership to you by, of course, Stonepages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view the details on each story, including that all-important source, don't forget to look at the Stonepages website at, you must know it by now, news.stonepages.com. I have to say, if you are one of the many and a growing audience there, a big Scottish welcome, an Italian welcome, and even a Canadian welcome to you all. So what have we got this week? Well, we have Bronze Age discoveries at the fabulously named Cheeseman's Green in England, and, well, I never, it's a Cretan story. 3,500-year-old Minoan building, an incredible palace complex, has been described. We've got the oldest dental filling found in a Stone Age tooth, and Stonehenge has been scanned to reveal hidden rock art. Danish textile history gets rewritten, and Bronze Age pathway gets found along a London railway. Don't get too excited here when I say Bronze Age pathway. Well, you'll see what I mean later on. Europe's oldest urban settlement has been found in Bulgaria. Is this in sort of a contradiction to the fabulous find that's also been done in Spain? Ah, the battling Europeans. God bless us. And second story about Stonehenge of the week. Yes, two stories about Stonehenge. That's quite greedy, isn't it? But Neolithic houses are to be built there. Probably stand up a lot better than the modern houses. Now we've got new insights into an ancient Mesopotamian trade route through obsidian. And we finish off with the nomadic horse worshippers of Kazakhstan. Sounds exciting. Well, if you want to find out what that's all about, you'll have to stay all the way to the end. Well, let's get back to Cheeseman's Green in England, where archaeologists have uncovered artifacts dating back 12,000 years during excavation work at the proposed development site at Cheeseman's Green, including a good place to have a site at Cheeseman's Green if you're actually going to discover something there, I have to say, including flint tools of ancient hunter-gatherer communities. But that's not all they've found. They found Neolithic, Bronze Age and Iron Age activity, including settlements and farmsteads. There's a fascinating picture emerging about how the area's agricultural landscape looked from the late Bronze Age through to the early years of Roman occupation in what is now southeast England. The information gained from all these sites is of regional importance, as it suggests that South Ashford was very densely settled from the late Bronze Age through to the early Roman period. It also implies that the agricultural landscape was completely reorganized under the Romans, with the deliberate destruction of settlements and monuments and the laying out of large rectilinear field systems. You can just imagine it. No, we don't want our field systems to be rectangles. We preferred them higgledy-piggledy. But the Romans won't have that. Straight lines they are. Now, as you probably guessed by now, I've only mentioned it twice. We were on a fabulous holiday in Crete, which I have to say, and I'm not working on behalf of the Cretan Tourist Information Service here, but it's a fabulous place to visit. It's even worth going and having a look at Knossos, even though it's been concreted into some sort of theme park, but there's amazing sites as well. There's Phaistos, Gortian, amazing archaeology across the entire island, and lovely people as well. Well, what, of course, Crete is known for is Minoan, and a 3,500-year-old Minoan building has been found, albeit a little while ago. It all happened with an accidental meeting in 1982 between a well-known Greek archaeologist, Yanis Sakellarakis, and a shepherd, who doesn't have a name, from Crete, who led them to an amazing archaeological discovery. The site is at Zaminthos, a settlement from the Minoan era on the high plains of the same name. That's at 1,187 metres above sea level. You'll realise when you go there why there's a sort of a summer palaces and the lower winter palaces. It just is so hot. The settlement is at the foot of the highest mountain in Crete, Mount Psilotoros, 8 kilometres from the village of Anogia. The shepherd who lived in that village invited the archaeologist who was working at a nearby site to visit. Sakellarakis realised what he was standing on was in fact the settlement from the Minoan period, hiding behind thick vegetation. Excavation started in the summer of 1983 and lasted until 1990. Excavations resumed in 2004 and are still ongoing. But in the past few years, the remains of an impressive 3,500-year-old building have now fully emerged. The building had two or three floors with over 80 rooms, including workshops and storage rooms, with a surface area of over 1,360 square metres. And, best of all, it's in excellent condition. The researchers say it's the first Minoan mountain settlement built at the same period as the Palace of Knossos, and the largest summer residence from the Minoan era yet discovered. This structure was built with large elongated stones, and the walls were painted with frescoes of different colours. Experts believe that the palace was destroyed by, wait for it, a violent earthquake. That actually becomes a running joke when you look at almost every site on Crete from almost any period. It ends up being destroyed by, yes, a violent earthquake. Three time periods have emerged from the Palace of Zminthos. The first construction, 1900 BCE, the second, 1600 BCE, at the height of its prosperity, when it was presumably destroyed by, yes, you guessed it, a violent earthquake, and finally around 1400 BCE, when another building was constructed nearby, which was destroyed by, yes, another violent earthquake. Fabulous site to put on your itinerary there. Now, trouble with your teeth? Well, just be glad you didn't have problems back in the Stone Age. A simple beeswax cap was applied to a broken tooth 6,500 years ago, and it's been decided it's the oldest dental filling on record. It adds to evidence that Neolithic communities had a surprisingly sophisticated knowledge of dentistry. The recipient of the treatment was most likely a 24 to 30-year-old man living in what is now Slovenia. His fossilised jawbone was found early last century near the village of Lange, at the time one of the oldest human bones ever found in the region. Claudio Tunis at the International Centre for Theoretical Physics in Trieste and his colleague Federico Bernardini happened to use the specimen to test new X-ray imaging equipment, and they spotted some unusual material attached to the canine, perfectly filling a large cavity and the upper part of a long vertical crack. Infrared spectroscopy identified the material as beeswax. The radiocarbon dating found both it and the tooth were 6,500 years old. Previous finds also suggest that Neolithic humans were competent dentists elsewhere. In 2001, David Freyer at the University of Kansas in Lawrence and his colleagues found drill holes, probably made by flint, in 11 human molars from a 7,500 to 9,000-year-old graveyard in Pakistan. Four of the drilled teeth showed signs of decay, but none held a filling. The more that we learn about prehistoric populations, the more we should appreciate these sophisticated techniques. Stephen Buckley at the University of York in the UK was part of a team who recently found evidence from analysis of teeth that Neanderthals practiced medicine. And he was quoted as saying that beeswax would make sense as a filling material for a number of reasons. It's easily melted but solidifies to fit the gap when cooled to room temperature, and it could contain honey and propolis, both of which have antibacterial and anti-inflammatory properties. I'll just stick to cleaning my teeth, thanks. A detailed laser scan survey of the entire monument at Stonehenge has discovered 72 previously unknown early Bronze Age carvings chipped into five of the gigantic stones. Graffiti added when the enormous slabs themselves were already 1,000 years old. All of the newly discovered prehistoric artworks are invisible to the naked eye. In the early Bronze Age, however, they would have been clearly visible. Of the 72 newly discovered images, 71 portray Bronze Age axe heads and one a Bronze Age dagger. Prior to the laser survey, 46 other carvings, also of axe heads and daggers, were known at Stonehenge. The laser scan survey has confirmed the existence of those images and provided more detail. The new discoveries almost trebles the number of carvings known at Stonehenge, now the single largest collection of prehistoric rock carvings in southern Britain. The main phase of the monument, built around the middle of the 3rd millennium BCE, was designed primarily as a solar temple, aligned on the midwinter and midsummer solstices. The carved axe heads and daggers belong to an enigmatic period between 1800 and 1500 BCE, when vast numbers of individual monumental tombs were constructed around Stonehenge. In Indo-European tradition, axe heads were often associated with storm deities, and some surviving European folklore suggests that upwards-facing axe blades were used to protect crops, people and property against lightning and storm damage. Every one of the Stonehenge axe heads have their blades pointing skywards, while the daggers all point downwards. The survey and analysis has yielded other insights as well. The entire site was constructed to be viewed primarily from the northeast, the side approached by what archaeologists have long believed to be a processional way aligned to the solstices. One of the stones at the now ruinous southwest side of the monument was also very deliberately worked and shaped to allow a line of sight through to the setting sun on midwinter's day. The implication is that at some stage in its history, there was a deliberate attempt at its destruction. Particularly puzzling is the discovery that masons were using two different techniques. Work on the monument's great circle, both uprights and lintels, was accomplished by working parallel to the long sides of the stones, while the five stone trilithons within the great circle, that's the horseshoe alignment of lintel stones, were dressed at right angles to the sides of the stones. This previously unknown fact suggests that the great trilithons may have been constructed slightly earlier than the great circle, rather than being contemporary with it. Well, it's amazing to say, but actually that was a fascinating Stonehenge story. Now to Denmark, where Danish textile history is to be rewritten. A combined team of researchers from the Danish National Research Foundation Centre for Textile Research, University of Copenhagen, University of Bergen and the National Museum of Denmark have been rewriting Denmark's textile history. The research centres around the remains of Denmark's most powerful ancestor, who died some 2,800 years ago and buried in an area known as Funen. How do we know that he was powerful? Well, the method of his burial. The person had been partly cremated, and the remains and bones then wrapped in a fine cloth made of stinging nettle fibre. This may sound strange, but Bronze Age weavers were very skillful, and nettle cloth could achieve levels of quality equal to raw silk. The wrapped remains were then placed inside a bronze container. Until now, it was believed that the cloth had been made from native Danish nettles, but using a technique which accurately measures the levels of strontium isotope in fibres, Karen Margarita Frey from the Centre of Textile Research made an astonishing discovery. The levels indicated that the nettles grew in an area with geologically old bedrock, which is not found in Denmark. It's already known that the other Danish bronze artefacts originated in Austria, so the analysis of the nettle cloth could point to Austria as a source of the material as well. Having established and accepted these facts, then the question remains as to whether the bronze and material were traded between ancient Austria and Denmark, or whether this eminent and powerful Dane died in Austria, was processed, and then his remains returned to Denmark. Makes you think. Now, remains of a Bronze Age pathway have been discovered in Plumstead, South London, as part of the construction of Crossrail, a major new railway. The find was made near the rail project's Plumstead Tunnel, close to Belmarsh Prison, where archaeologists discovered Britain's oldest known timber structure. That was back in 2009, you hopefully remember. This new find includes two wooden stakes cut by early London hunters with an axe, and which may have been used to build a timber pathway. The Crossrail line, which will eventually link Abbey Wood to central London, follows the same route as 3,500-year-old transport networks. A large network of timber pathways were constructed in the Bronze Age across East London. Archaeologists think that these would have allowed easier access for hunters into the rich wildlife that lived on the lush wetlands some 3,500 years ago. The wooden stakes are just a clue to the complete route, which has yet to be fully uncovered. Meanwhile, archaeologists will continue excavation in a hope desperate as it may be to find the full trackway. As although they haven't identified the actual track yet, the timbers are similar to those used to make trackways and certainly show that people were in the area. It's a promising find, and they will continue their search for evidence of the Bronze Age. Now, an exhibition is running throughout October at the Crossrail Tottenham Court Road Visitor Information Centre in St Giles High Street in London, where you can go along and have a look at all the finds so far. According to archaeology professor Nikolov, citing evidence from work done at Provadia Slonisata archaeological site in Bulgaria in summer 2012, Europe's oldest urban settlement is, wait for it, yes, in Bulgaria, near Provadia, a town located about 40 kilometres inland from the Bulgarian city of Varna. The team of archaeologists headed by Nikolov excavated surrounding stone walls estimated to date to between 4,700 to 4,200 BCE. The two walls are 2 metres thick and up to 3 metres high, and according to Nikolov, are the earliest fortifications from European prehistory. Probably there were about 300 to 350 people living on the site at that time, living in two-storey houses and probably involved in salt mining. Current theories suggest that salt has been extracted in the area for about 7,500 years. Salt, of course, was the currency of ancient times, both in terms of value and prestige. Control the salt, and you're going to be a very wealthy person. At the time, Provadia was the only place in the Balkans used to produce salt. He added that finds of grave sites at the necropolis showed that the people in the town were indeed wealthy. Ritual burial practices were also very strange and complex. Many of the people that were found were very well off, as we can see from the grave goods of copper needles and pottery. But in some cases, the corpses had been cut in half and only buried from the pelvis up. So where's the rest of them? Excavation in summer 2012 lasted 2 months and focused mainly upon the necropolis and the village. Now, Stonehenge story number two. A contract to build 3 life-size Neolithic houses at Stonehenge in Wiltshire has been put out to tender, if you're feeling up for that. English Heritage is inviting contractors to bid for the £60,000 project, which is part of a £27 million scheme to improve the setting of the monument. Using authentic materials, the prehistoric homes will be based on those excavated at Durrington Walls. English Heritage said the buildings will provide a real and tangible link for visitors to the distant past. The £27 million scheme to build a new visitor centre and close the road alongside the ancient monument was begun in July. Can you believe it? But a key aim for the new centre is to create a sense of prehistoric people using, working and living in the landscape. The recreated Neolithic buildings will form part of an interactive and experimental external exhibition at the 3,500-year-old World Heritage Site, which actually does receive more than 1 million visitors a year. The prehistoric homes will be based on the foundations of dwellings discovered at Durrington Walls back in 2007. The large settlement, dating to 2600 to 2500 BCE, was discovered under earthworks 3 kilometres from the stone circle. Visitors will be able to walk into the houses and see how people may have lived 4,500 years ago and experience something of the lifestyle of the builders who constructed Stonehenge. The contractor will have to work with volunteers using Neolithic building techniques and materials which hopefully will have been collected from the local area. It's a fantastic learning experience, but it's going to be quite a commitment. A prototype Neolithic house will be erected to Old Sarum early in 2013, with a new visitor centre at Stonehenge opening in time for the Olympics in autumn. Oh no, it's not. Oh well. The new visitor centre at Stonehenge will open in autumn 2013. Now, we've got new insights into ancient Mesopotamian trade routes. A team of social and earth science researchers led by Dr. Ellery Fram, Marie Curie experienced research fellow at the University of Sheffield here in the UK, their Department of Archaeology, has been making some remarkable discoveries in war-torn Syria. The research has centered around the study of samples of volcanic glass, commonly known as obsidian. By using modern scientific methods, and particularly X-ray analysis, the team has been able to accurately identify the point of origin of several artifacts made from obsidian. The level of accuracy has been such that the precise location on a specific volcano can now be determined. The techniques employed also included measuring the weak magnetic signals of each piece and comparing it to a known recorded location. Because it is very hard and extremely sharp when fractured, obsidian was widely used in the Middle East for tools right up to and beyond the discovery and use of metals. In fact, so sharp that people still use it for surgical tools. So finding and tracking the source of the raw material is highly significant when mapping the trade and social networking of the time. Dr. Fram is quoted as saying this is a rare, if not unique, discovery in northern Mesopotamia that enables new insights into changing Bronze Age economics and geopolitics. We can identify where an obsidian artifact originated because each volcanic source has a distinctive fingerprint. This is why obsidian sourcing is a powerful means of reconstructing past trade routes, social boundaries, and other information that allows us to engage in major social science debates. The big fear, however, is the continuing conflict in Syria, which threatens the very sites themselves. Now, finally, you've been waiting for it. Yes, those nomadic horse worshippers of Kazakhstan. 2,500 years ago, the steppes of Kazakhstan were the home to nomadic tribes. But one part of their nomadic lives was a little bit more permanent, where they were buried. Well, hopefully. These burial mounds, or kurgans, were anything up to 35 metres in diameter. And because the steppes were subject to permafrost, the kurgans preserved perfectly all that was buried within them. Although this later proved problematic when excavating and removing the artefacts through permafrost. Now, an exhibition has been mounted at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. to display some of the artefacts which have been uncovered in the past few decades. Because of their nomadic nature, the tribes obviously revered the horse, which is vital to their lifestyle. And in one very interesting find, an obviously wealthy and important man was interred with 13 sacrificed horses. The horses were decorated in death as in life, as extravagantly as their owner, with golden ornaments and expensive textiles. But even these rich pickings, very little is known about their way of life and religion. The curator of the exhibition, archaeologist Alexander Nagal, is quoted as saying, "Scholars are just beginning to learn more about the rituals practiced by these nomadic tribes. We do know that later on shamanism was practiced and that it continued into the modern 19th century. Well, if you want to get along to that exhibition, you've got until the 12th of November this year. Get along there. Places to go to, let me think now. Well, of course, I'm going to say pasthorizons.com. If you want to learn all the latest news, have all the latest articles, and find all the latest places to go on archaeological expeditions, then it's going to be Past Horizons. Looking for tools as well? Look no further than pasthorizonstools.com. Blimey. Where else to go? Well, it's going to have to be Stone Pages. There is loads to be found on Stone Pages. News.stonepages.com for all the news. And thank you for listening to this news podcast. I'm David Connolly, and I will be hopefully seeing you again next week.